Yeah. All right.
And that's what you get with our fearless leader on Caching in the Northwest. Welcome to Caching in the Northwest. You know, this is the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest. You know, tonight, let's talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent, or in my case, that little corner of the continent. So, while you're figuring out how fast your old toboggan can go down that hill, we'll be caching in the Northwest. And I can't do that without my well-chemoed chimp. Some say he is the inter-office curling champion. Another say he has to leave his house under the cover of darkness to avoid the groupies. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Hey, everybody. Yes, it is the Land Monkey here. I am on the air with my good friend Wits End, and we've got a special guest tonight, and that's Lazy Bones. Lazy Bones, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
All right. And, you know, we're also going to shout out a quick thanks to our patrons who help to keep this podcast coming live every week. If you want to know more about supporting the show, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website.
Absolutely. We really appreciate all of our patrons and all of you listeners. Now, right. According to the geocaching.com blog, there were over 70 million logs posted just last year. At least 52 of those were glow-worthy, because we read one glow a week. Like I figured that out on my own. This week's glow contribution is Birds of a Feather, WAC7, is that correct?
That is correct.
That's not the GC code, is that, that's the no. Finder name?
Okay. No, that's not. That's neither. That is neither the finder name nor.
That is the log.
That is the name of the cache.
It is GC76GGP. How about that? Golf Papa. So, anyway, without further ado, let's read the glow, shall we?
Well, before you do that, I realize that I am in error and I did not give you the name of the geocacher, which I just put into the show notes for you.
Oh, the geocacher is Nankikaro. Wow, look at that. Words just appear here before my very eyes. Thank you so much for your contribution.
Magic.
So, the glow reads, so excited to be writing this log. An amazing cache, an incredible puzzle, my first FTF, and I got to share it all with my partner in crime, Doramore. 2018 is shaping up to be my best year ever. Last night, Doramore and I talked about this puzzle, and I explained my theory and gave her the north coordinates and challenged her to find the west. I heard the light bulb go off in her head and knew she was on the hunt. I really did not think she would solve it, so went out and did not check my phone until midnight. Doramore had the west coordinates. OMG! I set my alarm and we hit the road at 7 to find the cache. We were challenged again getting the logbook, but perseverance and a strong arm paid off. Then we signed the shiny new log. I'm going to be on cloud 9 for quite some time. Thank you for making my year just 6 days in.
There you go. So that's Nankikaro's log on WAC 7 Birds of a Feather, GC76GGP. And we're just so glad to be able to share that and glad you enjoyed your experience there at that cache, Nankikaro. Hopefully the rest of your year is keeping up with that level of excitement. Now, folks, a reminder that if you have any sort of milestone cache find or you know, anything you're either celebrating or you just want to share, why not call it in at 253-693-TFTC, share it with the Northwest community, or heck, use that voicemail tool on the website. And we would love to hear your voice and share it back with everyone else.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we had some website feedback that I was going to share here. It's from Bullcasher. He said, one useful thing I've discovered in GSAC is that after I find a cache and log it, it shows up as found in the database. I then double-click the yellow number in the lower right, which brings up all my found caches. Then I go to Database, Move, Copy Waypoints, Then I've moved those found caches into the database that has all my found caches in it. If I'm faithful to that, then I don't really ever have to rerun the my finds query and import it. Ah, there you go. Right. So this is going back a few episodes when we had Kev MacD on the show, and we were talking about GSAC, and we were talking about how to get your caches into GSAC out of the geocaching database. So there you go. Some good feedback from Bullcacher. Thank you.
Very cool.
All right.
Also had an email from Wino Seattle, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm reading this one. I'm thinking, did we read this one on the show already? But you know what? Go ahead. It doesn't hurt to read it again.
Just in case, we want to make sure we honor the people that send in feedback to us. So this one reads, I hit a milestone today. Never mind trying to hit 5,000 finds in the last 3 months. Today I logged my 1,000th trackable. And then I ate it.
What?
I went to a Signal in Australia event at Beaver Lake in Sammamish. Everywhere was there with these little Christmas or Hanukkah, if you're Jewish, chocolate coins. Turns out they were trackables. F10244, 2018 Geo Coin Fest chocolate coin. So I logged it for 1,000, and then I ate it.
There you go. Awesome.
And as a side note, I have also eaten a Geocoin trackable, so chocolate one, not any Geocoin.
Some of those other ones are a little crunchier.
They're a little harder to get down sometimes, yeah.
Oh, funny stuff.
Well, that's great. We appreciate feedback of all types. Make sure to send it. Keep it coming in. We love to get it.
We do.
Now, this week on this here very episode of the podcast, we're going to talk about putting together geocache containers that hold up to the elements, that are unique and interesting, and that don't cost you an arm and a leg. That's the little trifecta there. So we've brought in an expert on the topic, and that would be Lazy Bones. Okay, sir, so to get us started, what are the essential components to making any geocache container?
Well, obviously you got to start with a waterproof container, right? It's going to be out in the elements. You want to make sure that it lasts as long as possible, right? And surprisingly, it's not that difficult to find lots of different containers that are cheap. Like, go to the dollar store. I find pill containers all the time, and I use them for a lot of my caches, and they cost $1.25. They have an O-ring, and they'll last at least a year, if not a little bit longer than that. But beyond, like, a waterproof container, you obviously will need some glue, camouflage, and even just a little bit of paint can really go a long way to help building a cache and keeping it really creative and fun to see. And find and hide.
All right. Well, you sound well experienced in this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea how many of these caches you've built and placed?
Oh, geez. Built, well, it's been, I'd say probably around 40 or so, but actually placed only about 25, because usually I'll build caches when something comes to mind, but they don't always work for just throwing out in the wild.
Sure.
For one reason or another, I'm not necessarily able to hide them all the time. So
there you go. So that brings up a question that I have. Do you start with a location and then you build a hide for that specific location? Or is it more that it just a hide idea comes to you, you build a cache, and now it's like, oh, now I got to find a place to put this?
I've tried doing that, like building a cache and then trying to find a place, but it's really difficult to make it like well camouflaged and make it work in that location. Like, so I found that you have to find a really good place and then like come up with your idea from there. Once you go to the location, then you can kind of this location's going to work with this type of hide. So for example, if you're on the side of a building, you can maybe put an electrical conduit, versus if you have a big amount of metal, you can put something magnetic, but you can't really tell that until you've been to the location.
We seem to be having a little bit of technical difficulty. Oh, there he is.
A little bandwidth issue maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Did I disappear?
You did, but we got the idea. We're good.
Cool. Just for a moment.
Awesome.
Well, that's great. So there's obviously several ways to go about getting started in this. Is there an easy way just to get started building some creative caches?
Well, you can collect caches, like collect containers, basically. If you look into my background, you'll see I have a whole stack of containers.
So you don't mean, like, so sorry, you don't mean like go out, find a geocache and bring it home, like collect it.
No, don't take them from the actual geocaches, but things around your house, you find like a pill container or like vitamins and those types of containers work really, really well. But like you just got to collect things around the house. That's the thing I found that is the most effective. You don't have to spend a whole bunch of money. Or like I was saying earlier, going to the dollar store and finding something cheap. And then you buy a tube of glue, you have a set of glue for the next 100 geocaches that you're working on. So glue, a little bit of paint, like your initial investment might cost $10 or $15. But from that, you can make 10, 20, 30 geocaches. And it's not super difficult. Like, it's just a matter of coming up with that camouflage once you've been at that location, like we were saying.
Right on. Okay. So you're talking about glue a little bit. Do you have any suggestions on which glue or adhesive is going to work best for, you know, we're in the Northwest, so year-round conditions up here, you get below freezing, you get lots of wet. What works well?
Yeah, glue can really be the tricky one. It's like, I've been hiding caches for what, 5-6 years, and it's always kind of an adventure trying to figure out what the best glue is. The ones that I've found the most effective is the Gorilla Glue. It takes a long time to dry, and it dries, it expands and it turns yellow, but it once it has dried, it is solid and it's not coming apart unless you put some serious force into it. And so I like this one to make sure that it sticks multiple different things of different types together. My other favorite is Bond. Well, I guess I'm not a creative caching person anymore.
You needed some better adhesive on that sign, I think.
I was using tape, so that's my own fault. It's just laughing at me that I'm talking about glue. It is my other favorite one. It works to connect a lot of different things together, and it doesn't really expand, and it dries clear, which is like when you're coming up with things like this. When I use the Gorilla Glue, it's really, really challenging to kind of like, you have to then paint over it unless you're actually making something that's yellowish, because that yellow can really, really stick out and kind of ruin the effect that you're going for. The Weld Bond doesn't have that. It dries clear, so whatever's underneath is what the color will be. And I've also found when it comes to kind of going for longevity of caches, Weld Bond, if you do like a really thin layer over top of your cache, it actually kind of works as like a sealant and is effective in multiple different ways. So you can stick things to it while also kind of attempting to work against the rain that we get here in the Northwest. Yeah, that's kind of it for like the glue. The best thing like I do every time I go to the store essentially is, you've never heard of or used before, I pick it up and then I go and test it and I play around with it and kind of learn how it works. I make caches a lot of times. I live right next to a park that has a bunch of caches in it. And so I'll make little caches and I'll throw them out in the park and then check on them a week or two later and see how they kind of stood up to the tests of the environment, essentially.
Sure. Now, I imagine that choosing the right glue or experimenting the right glues is half the battle or part of the battle. I would guess that maybe surface preparation before you apply said glue is also very important to do, right?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of times I'll just take some sandpaper, I'll sand down whatever it is, kind of help it to, like, a lot, like, so the containers that I get from the dollar store and the glue can sometimes just slide, like, what you glue it in, it, but it can slide out if the temperature or the environment changes in any way. So if you kind of sand things down, that will give it more of a texture that the glue can really stick to then. And it helps to ensure that it stays together, whatever it is that you're gluing together, yeah.
Cool. So you've made a lot of amazing creative containers, creative cache containers. Do you have a favorite? What's the favorite one you've ever made?
That's a really, really tough question. I find that most of the time, whatever the current cache that I'm working on, building, is my favorite because I put all of that effort, that time, that energy into that cache. And so that one's my favorite until I come up with a new idea. And then I need to start making something else because I'm maybe not as excited about that last cache that I work on. So I kind of use the excitement, the motivation to keep building something newer, bigger, better.
There you go. So if someone's looking to get started in trying to build their own creative cache container out of parts they either have around the house or something they've picked up at the dollar store, as you're suggesting, what would be your top tips for making sure that the cache is going to last through a year?
Right. So the first thing that you got to understand is that geocaches aren't permanent. Sure, you might, if you had like an ammo can up in the woods or whatever, that might last a long time. But especially when you're going creative, you have to anticipate you're going to have to remake and continue maintenance on that cache. It sucks, but it's still part of the game. That's what happened. You can't just assume that you'll make it once and never have to look at it again. So for me, my goal is always to make it between 1 and 2 years before I have to replace it. That's kind of the sweet spot that I found. And so when I talk about those dollar store pill containers, they're essentially bison tubes. They work, but again, they're from the dollar stores. So you get a year and a half, 2 years. Buying like a proper bison tube will get you a lot longer time, but it'll cost you a little bit more, right? So like I was saying, though, like making sure that container has a rubber seal on it, especially if it's like a bison tube or from the dollar store. They have rubber seals. I collect the actual containers constantly, and I get extra rubber seals, so you can also use that to replace and maintain down the road. And then when you're painting the cache, make sure that you use the clear sealant. So you can get this from, I think it's Walmart that I got it. It's literally just a clear sealant paint. It costs $3-4. I don't know. Not a lot, though. And you spray it over, and it seals and helps ensure that the water doesn't get into the container or doesn't ruin any of the paint or the work, like the camouflage job that you've been doing in this creative cache.
So I have a question for you about that, the sealant that you had there. Is that finished in a gloss or a matte finish, do you know?
It's a non-yellowing clear. I'm pretty sure it's non-gloss.
Okay. Because I would think...
But that is something that's a very good thing to point out, is that when you are purchasing, look for something. Like, they usually will say if it's gloss or not on the actual can, and a lot of times you don't want the gloss because that will definitely make it stand out. That's a very good point. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. No worries.
Yeah. So, that kind of covers it. Like, using this versus what we were talking about, the weld bond earlier, that also works really well. Just covering your cache. It's an extra step, and a lot of, like, initially when I first started making caches, I kind of avoided that step because it's an extra, you have to wait for it to dry and you have to go through that whole process. But it's like, in the long run, it saves you having to rebuild the cache 6 months down the road versus a year and a half down the road. So it definitely helps, and it's worth the extra 10 minutes or whatever that you have to take to make that.
Right on. Now, if someone wanted to see some of these creative caches that you've made, where would they look?
Most of my caches are located in Vancouver, in the Vancouver area, specifically along Fraser and the Knight Street areas, because that's kind of close to where I live. Generally, I try to make my caches near enough to me that I can easily go and walk out to the location and so that I can check on them, because I'm assuming, like, they will need maintenance down the road. I have a cache that's 170 meters away from me in the park right now, and I pretty much have to rebuild it every 8 to 10 months. But because it's so close, that isn't a big deal for me. So that's kind of, it's a give and take. You want to have creative, but you're also going to have to maintain it for sure.
Right on. And I noticed GeoNavPros over in the chat is mentioning Richmond GeoTour. I think you've got a couple of your creative caches in the Richmond GeoTour?
Yes, I helped with the second iteration of the GeoTour. The one that I found most people enjoy is the Forest Mechanisms. If you get a chance, by all means, go and check out Forest Mechanisms. It is probably... probably one of the favorite ones that I've ever built, because I've never really had the opportunity to kind of like play around and have, like, I got permission from the city of Richmond to do what I did. And without that specific permission, it would be a lot more difficult to be able to build what I did. I don't want to give it away because it's so totally worth it. But if you get a chance, yeah, Richmond C150 number 16 Forest Mechanisms. GC code is GC6XB25. It's in the Richmond Nature Park, or right beside the Nature Park. And you will not be disappointed, I promise you that. But I do have to give a shout out. GeoNav Pros helped me build that one. He was a huge help, and him and I walked to and from the Ground Zero 500 meters there and back at least three different times with a large ladder in hand. So that gives you a hint on what that is. You do not need a ladder to find the cache, though, I promise you that.
There you go.
Love it. Well, I do love a creative cache container, but let me play devil's advocate for just a minute here. Why would you encourage other people to make these creative cache containers? I mean, when you look at your geocaching logs, it's just one find. You don't get extra credit for the creativity, right? Why not just drop a lock and lock under a bush, or hang a nano in a cedar right outside Land Monkey's house?
Well, I do want to do that, but there's a lot of different ways that you want to hide something more creative than just dumping a basic container, obviously. First of all, like we were saying, like that longevity of the cache, you're going to build it, you're going to make sure that it's waterproof. And when you hide something creative, especially in an urban area, it's less likely to be found by a muggle. That's kind of what I always am going for. I'm living right in the middle of Vancouver. I don't have the opportunity to just go into the forest and shove a container under a tree that nobody's going to walk past. People are going to walk past these caches. So the more creative that you can make them, the less likely somebody's going to see them, the less likely it's going to get thrown away or whatever. And the other thing is, like, I found that it's way more fun for geocachers to find something that's creative. It just feels like, oh, I just got another number when I open a lock and lock because I've found them so much. But when I find that creative cache, it makes for that memory. It's an experience and something that they can write about in their log. Or at least I hope that they'll write about in their log. That's always the fun to get those. But that's part of the game. It's part of giving back to the community. Like, I've been finding caches for years upon years upon years, so I feel like it's my responsibility to be able to give others that same experience, that same sense of wonder. Wow, that is such a cool experience, right? And then when you do that, it'll also result in favorite points. Okay, sure, I'm not like, I like to get favorite points, but it's not just about me. It shows, like, when people go explore and they, oh, I'm going to visit Vancouver, a lot of them aren't just going to go and look for the geocache on the corner. They're going to go and search which one has the most favorite points. And when they find that all of East Vancouver is filled with these caches that have 20, 30, 40 favorite points, they're going to get excited and they're more likely to stick around and find all of those caches. So I feel like it's kind of like the rah-rah of go Team Vancouver, our community, and being like, we have the, I'm not going to say we have the best, but we have some really friggin' awesome caches that check out.
Yeah, I think you've made a really good point because, you know, one of the things I found when I went and did which one was it, the Auburn City Geo Tour or Geo Coin Challenge, where a lot of bounce caches are, it's a real draw down there when you know that there's really good quality caches to go and find. It just helps draw you into the area. So I think it's, you know, bounce tends to focus more on creative caches with a tech bent to them. But they're still amazing. And, you know, Lazy Bones, from my experience with your caches, there's less of a tech bent and more of a just fitting into the environment and the hidden in plain sight tendency to them. Would that be a fair description?
the thing I kind of missed earlier was like how to do that camouflage. Like when you go to that location, sure, you're going to have that waterproof container, but that waterproof container, the only purpose for it is to hold that logbook. That camouflage isn't something that you're necessarily going to create. And so when I go to that location, I'm going to find things. Like I've done this multiple times. I'll go to a location, I'll find a bunch of rocks in that location, and I will physically take them home. I feel like a crazy person because I'm carrying rocks around with me. But when like you bring those home with you, and then like I'll like give it away. I did this at a cache in East Vancouver, and I literally just glued the rock from that location to the container. That's all I did. And now I shoved it into a hole where I found the rock initially. And it's one of the most difficult caches that I personally own. People are DNFing it all the time because it blends in so well. So the key thing is go out and so yeah, we were talking about like also like you just at home, you're collecting containers. It's the same thing when you're out geocaching, collect camouflage. GeoNav Pros and I all the time we're walking around and oh, there's a stick, or oh, there's a piece of bark, and we'll just shove it into our backpack and we'll bring it home. And yes, I look like a bit of a crazy person to my neighbors with the entire stack of wood and bark that I have sitting on my back porch. But those are the pieces that you can use then with that glue, with that bit of paint that makes that effective. Like you don't have to spend the money when nature has the camouflage right there for you. You just got to go out and pick it up.
There you go. Awesome. So Lazy Bones, if someone wanted to learn more about creative cache design and technique, where would you point them to learn how to, or how to get started with this?
Well, I found that a lot of my inspiration initially came from searching for creative caches on YouTube. You go into YouTube, you search creative caches, there is just hundreds upon hundreds of videos. Some of them have spoilers. If you don't like spoilers, then... But that's part of learning, right? And so a lot of those videos, they're documenting those creative caches because people are excited by them. And so I then take those ideas, and like the more you see them, the more you kind of, your brain starts to like process and think and be like, wow, this is how I can do that. Like it changes the way you start to think about geocaching. And just so I just try to cram my head full as many concepts as possible. And that way then I can make slight iterations or just do a copycat of a cache. Obviously by letting them, like giving them the credit. But just because somebody on the other side of the world has done a really cool cache doesn't mean that you can't do the exact same thing here. And most of the people here aren't likely to have ever seen it or even heard of it. So alternatively to YouTube, I found that Pinterest is really effective. I don't use Pinterest for anything else except for creative geocaches. I have boards upon boards upon boards of photos and videos of creative caches on there. And again, it's just getting as many ideas and concepts into your head, seeing something really creative, being like, how did they build that? I don't understand. And then just processing and, oh, that's how, okay, now I'm going to do that. And then finally, just going out and finding those caches in the wild. Go look for caches with high favorite points. And again, it just gets your head thinking in a totally different way. Like I'm sure a lot of people find just going geocaching without the creativity, it gets yourself thinking. You're constantly puzzling and, oh, there's a hole there. That could be a good place to hide a geocache. Oh, there's a branch there. Everybody that's geocached knows that mentality, is that after you started geocaching, you start just being like, oh, that would be a great place to hide a cache. It's the same thing with creative geocaches, is that once you start thinking about them, you'll start coming up with more and more ideas.
Very cool. All right. Well, I think that wraps up what we were going to talk about for this part of the show. We're going to go through our tail end wrap up of the standard part of the show. But Lazy Bones, if you don't mind joining us, we'll ask you to hang out with us in the after show.
Absolutely.
All right. So Wit's End, do you want to share with us what's, or share with our listeners, what's coming up in the next few episodes?
We've got some exciting things coming up in the next few episodes. You know, there's only one Cashing in the Northwest episode left in the month of February. It's going by very, very quickly. And that would be show 239, Geocaching Apps Roundup. So if you have a favorite geocaching app that you'd like to discuss, send in some comments to us ahead of time, and we'll bring include that as part of our discussion. We're going to talk about all kinds of geocaching apps. And then we're going to start the month of March, episode 240, with some top cache tips from the city of Victoria, British Columbia, with the Landsharks. That's Landshark with a Z. So always love having them on the podcast. It's going to be great to learn some tips around Victoria, BC. Maybe you're planning a trip coming up here in the spring or summer up there. It's a great place to visit and a great place to go geocaching. Do you want to talk about the rest of March, or shall I continue?
Sure, sure. No, I'll jump in there. Now, we have a possibility that one of these shows is going to change up. I'm just working with another guest who may come in either March 8th or 15th, but right now they're scheduled to be episode 241 on March 8th, which is event hosting top tips. And great. March 15th, episode 242, is keeping your caching gear organized. Now, like I said, stay tuned, folks, because one of those may change up with a special guest. We're just seeing what we can work out. But in the meantime, we also want to thank our faithful Denali-level supporters, and that's Bounce Bounce, Team Squirrel, and WorldCaching.com. Thank you guys very much for your support. Folks, if you want to know more about supporting the show, click the Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website. And of course, a shout out to every single one of you guys who supports us every month. We really could not do this show without you guys. So that is a thank you to Subway Mark, Dora Moore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geo Nav Pros, Wino Seattle, Ackerdoc, OBX Geek, Camp Clan, B Pendragon, Billy Robson, Kev MacD, Tick Magnet, Gene Eyes, and Antaeus. And I had to take a little breath in there this time.
Wow.
You guys got me.
This is getting long. Really appreciate each and every one of you out there. Thank you so, so much. Now, until we meet again next week, we like to leave our listeners with some tips, or some, I should say, suggested methods to get in hold of us, get in touch with us, send us some messages. And let's reach out to our guest here first. And Lazy Bones, where would you like people to try to reach out and connect with you?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is lazy_bones. Lazy spelled L-A-Y-Z-E-E underscore bones. I know I spell it weird. I'm not lazy, I promise. And on Instagram, my handle is IanBergMotion, all one word. Those are probably my best options to follow me and connect with me.
Awesome. And I'm sure that many of our listeners will do just that after this episode. Land Monkey, how about you?
Hey, well, you know, you can always find us at landmonkey.blogspot.ca or .com. But we always encourage people to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope at landmonkeygc. We're, you know, we go on our adventures almost every other weekend, and definitely make sure we've got lots of creative caches we find and share pictures of those. And again, you know, YouTube, every once in a while, we've got a new video coming out, so I've been doing a lot of filming, and I've got a bunch of editing to do. There'll be some new episodes, so just search YouTube for Land Monkey, LANMONKEY. Wit's End, my friend, where do folks find you?
Wit's End is my handle on Facebook, Twitter, geocaching, and just about everywhere I can get it. That's Wit's End with a Z in the middle. And you never know, sometimes Wit's End shows up on that Land Monkey YouTube channel, too. I'm always surprised when I see a new Land Monkey video and looking at myself there. It's not always comfortable, but there I am.
Well, you're a good sport.
No, it's great. We have a good time. Thank you so much for including us.
That's awesome. And of course, normally Chris of the Northwest would be here. You can find him at CachingNW on Twitter, Facebook, Google+. And, you know, if you want to head over to cachingnw.com/hosts, you can find bios for all three of us and links to all the different ways that, you know, you can find to stalk us. We just enjoy it so much. All right, folks. Well, we want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. And remember that you can be a part of the show by calling 253-693-TFTC, leaving us a comment, asking us a question, or sending us a malfunctioning pair of electric socks any time of the day or the night. And of course, you can email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Also, your support helps to keep quality shows coming. So if you enjoyed this rare quality show, please click the Patreon link on the CatchingNW.com website and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. The show is produced by Chris Umfenauer and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris J. and Jim Pawlitz. The show is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Umfenauer. Now, folks, you're going to have to do it live this time, Jim.
Oh, I'm going to try.
Stay tuned for
the after show. There you go. Yeah, I decided not to try to a cappella box beat the closing music. I thought it might just not work well.
Oh, that's awesome, guys. So, yeah. So, listeners, if you're listening to the podcast and those who are watching and listening live, our apologies for the odd audio situation, but because our good friend Chris of the Northwest couldn't join us this evening, and Mr. Land Monkey almost had everything ready, except for I completely forgot that I needed to have external audio sources for our intros and outros.
We're ready to go punch the go live button, and Land Monkey says, "Oh, I don't have the music."
So close.
To which Lazy Bones and I said, "We can sing it."
There you go.
Then we decided to be creative and provide that creative outlet. And
well, tonight's episode was all about creativity, right? So there you go.
That's right. There you go.
And Lazy Bones, you're a great sport for that. Thank you.
Really appreciate having you on.
All right. Well,
there have been a few different changes this week. If you're watching live, you notice I'm not in my home studio. Just out the window is Interstate 90. So it's really not. It's the same Interstate 90 that is right there going over Snoqualmie Pass. It's just 2,400 miles east or so. I've traveled to the city of Boston this morning to do a job here this weekend. So I'm on the road. I have not been able to pull up the chat here with my portable podcast studio. So I don't know what's going on in the chat tonight. Land Monkey's monitoring it solo, I think.
Yeah, so I got one in there right away for you, Wit's End.
Okay, well, before we go there, let's just also address the fact that, and we mentioned our fearless leader is not with us tonight, and we wanted to share with our dedicated and loyal Caching the Northwest family that Chris's mother lost her battle with leukemia late last night, and so our prayers, thoughts, and condolences go out to his whole family, and he was not in the condition, as you can imagine, to join us tonight in person, but He's with us here in spirit, and we know that he wants us to continue on with the episode tonight, so we did. And we wanted to share that all with our Caching the Northwest family.
Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. And Chris, if you're listening tonight, or if you end up listening to this episode, know that we're all thinking about you and praying for you and your family. And it's a tough time to go through, and we're just we're there for you however you need us.
Yeah.
All right. So the first question I'm going to pull out of the FATAS here for you, Wit's End, is has Wit's End found any caches in Boston yet?
No. Well, not this trip. I have been to Boston previously, and I have found geocaches in Boston. I did not find one yet on this trip, although I did scope out a few on the app, which you're going to talk about next week with the apps. So I've scoped a few out that aren't too far from the hotel here, and I intend to make at least one find in between my work assignments here this weekend.
Very good. Very good. All right. I am trying to go through here and keep up with you guys. You're awesome over there in the chat. I have to say, I've been on some other podcasts, and I got to say...
There are other podcasts? What?
There are other geocaching podcasts, and I got to say, and maybe I'm a little biased, but I kind of think we've got the best live audience out of any geocaching podcast.
I know we do.
You guys are amazing. Like, it's just, it's hard to keep up, but that's okay. I like that problem. All right.
Good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have. So Alpinese GC asked a question. They said, can a person log a find when they don't actually retrieve the container and sign the log? As an example, a container high in a tree. So there's a geocaching ethics conundrum there. So if you ask me, my opinion is, if you didn't have the log in your hand, if you didn't, or, you know, if the log was not extracted from the cache to sign, you can't sign it. Now, the only exception in this kind of scenario I can see is if you go as a group and one person climbs the tree for the group, signs the log for the group. I think that's the exception that I would see in that scenario. But generally,
that kind of happens with groups in general when you're out caching. And sometimes it's a nano log sheet, or for whatever reason, it's easier just to sign the log with a group name rather than individual sign it. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you should log a find if you didn't actually. So like, you walk up to the base of a tree, you look up and go, yeah, oh, I see a bison tube up there. Found.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count.
Yeah, so there you go.
You gotta sign the log.
You gotta sign the log. Well, it's actually part of the rules of the game, isn't it? Like, it's a basic rules documented in the game.
Yes.
I think what
unless it's an event cache.
Unless, yeah. Well, I think there only are three rules to the games, technically, so.
That's not trash. It's a geocache.
Oh, please don't start that. That's
sorry.
That's all right. Hey, we had a Fatas. Sorry, folks, I'm not keeping track of who asked us. Oh, it was from Keats. Said, speaking of creative caches, GC599X6, Skunktail Sea Hag. Will it ever be found?
Nope. I'm going to say yes.
Nope.
Those of us local up here in Vancouver know exactly what cache that is. And yeah, hasn't been, what, it's got to be over a year and a half, almost 2 years?
No, longer than that.
Is it?
Let's find out.
All right. Research department's on it. All right.
2014, July 19, 2014 is when it was hidden.
So about 3.5 years or so.
Wow. Still not found. And it's often questioned, is it really there?
It's not there. He's just laughing at us.
Yeah, if you know the CO, it's a reasonable question to ask.
Yeah. All right. I saw a couple of questions in the comments in the chat that I wanted to address that
jump
were
in there.
Kind of about me, if you don't mind.
Jump in there, man.
Sure.
Sorry, I now lost it. Alpinese, I believe, was asking where you can find my Pinterest boards. I tried to link it in the chat, but apparently you can't link URLs in the chat. So if you go on Pinterest and you search Ian Berg Motion, I think you get my page. I don't really know Pinterest very well, so it makes it, I just use it for my own personal thing rather than sharing. But if you can find it, you might be able to find it on that way. And what was the other one? Keats commented about if you have the patience, growing moss on a fake rock may act as cool camouflage. I've never heard about growing moss using yogurt was part of his comment as well.
Yeah, there's a whole conversation there with Alpinese GC.
I actually have heard of that technique.
Have you?
If you go to the dollar store, though, you can buy bags of moss. It's like a fake moss, and it works really, really well for camouflaging items. The only thing to note is that it's really difficult for this to stay on. Like, when you glue it on, the weather quick. So the only way this works effectively is if you're putting it in a covered area where it's not going to get rained on. So...
Not to be confused with Kate Moss. That's different.
Also, you want to put her somewhere where she's not going to get rained on.
True.
All right. Wow. You guys, just awesome. Oh, there we go. So pinterest.ca/IanBergMotion. Thank you very much.
Oh, perfect.
All right. What else have we got? We've got... Team Finn was letting us know about their next events that are coming up. So they say join us next Wednesday for National Pancake Day, 7:30, 8:30 in the morning at the IHOP in Renton. All right. I don't know where Renton is. It sounds very exciting.
It's right near SeaTac Airport.
Ah.
So kind of halfway between Tacoma, Seattle.
Perfect. There you go.
Those are people that live in Renton probably will, you know, disagree with me vehemently about that description of Renton, but.
Oh, hilarious. They have another event that just published, and it's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, March 22nd at the Menchie's in Fairwood. And then they posted a link. Menchie's, that's like an ice cream place or frozen yogurt or something, right?
Yeah, we've had a geocaching event there a couple of years ago in New West.
So that one. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good place to have an event.
Yeah.
And it's nicer than the end of the event at 8 p.m., which gives people an hour to get home in time to watch Caching in the Northwest on Thursday night.
There you go. Awesome. And, what else do we have? Team Finn said a certain Sherpa Bob is trying to make a creative cache, but it's taking a while. So I'm not sure. I'm sure there's some story behind that.
That is the thing that you got to realize, though, is that you can't hide geocaches that are creative and well hidden like that in a short amount of time. It can take me a month, 2 months, even three. I've spent a year on a one cache before just to make sure. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, but you can't hide 30 creative caches in a weekend like some people do with their lock and lock containers. So definitely be prepared to spend a little bit of time and anticipate that it'll be a few months before your cache is ready to go.
Awesome. There you go. And Kev MacD responded to that National Pancake Day event and said that he tried to hold a pancake event, but it fell flat. All right. Boom, boom. Thank you very much. Kev MacD's here all week. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
That's right.
All right. What else have we got going on here in hashtag FATAS? I think
Kev MacD also talked about some clothing.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to go down there?
Sure, why not? Sure, why not? There were some observations made in the chat about my sweater that I'm wearing tonight. I am wearing my Sock Monkey sweater.
Nice.
So
just get him a pair of cymbals and he's be all set.
Yep, absolutely. This was a Christmas present from Mrs. Land Monkey. So
nice.
Here we go.
Cute.
Yeah, just I need the matching toque now at some point in time.
Yeah, that's right.
FTF right. Prize.
Yeah. I have to get more FTFs to get a prize.
You gotta get 1,000 FTF. No, wait, that was trackables that were logged.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I hear that Skunktail Sea Hag is just out there waiting for FTF. Yeah. So. Yeah.
There's your FTF prize. If you find Sea Hag, you're going to get your two.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thanks, guys. I'm enjoying the fun ribbings in the chat there. You guys are awesome. All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for tonight, folks, unless there's anything else you guys over in the chat really want to make sure we talk about. I think we're gonna call it a night. It's been a fun Thursday night. Lazy Bones, thanks for hanging out with us tonight. It has been a lot of fun learning about creative caches with you. I've learned more than I had previously about glue. And
thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. You're welcome back anytime, buddy.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
All right. So with that, folks, thank you very much for listening. If you're driving in your car, thanks for hanging out with us on your commute. If you're standing at the bus stop bobbing your head, sorry there was no music to bob your head to. And as we always there we go. As we always say, get out there and cache safely and cache often.